This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I'm talking to Gene Mirabelli. He's the author of a novel called Renato After Alba, A-L-B-A, published by McPherson and Company. How are you, Gene?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Well, this, you know, it's sort of in a way unfortunate that this is the first novel of yours that I've read, because this is your most recent book and you've written quite a number of novels. So I'm coming to you kind of late, and I apologize for that because it means I don't know your work as well as I should. But I really like this book quite a bit. And I don't want to give away too much about it to potential readers, but it is a kind of meditative novel. Maybe how would you characterize it yourself?
Well, that's a good word for it, as a matter of fact. It's a brief novel, and it concerns, the central character is, of course, a person whose wife has died after a happy marriage of over 50 years. But it is not a memoir. And although it is true, when I had completed the novel which precedes this and was getting it ready for publication, and we hoped at that point to take a trip and go someplace like Europe or something like that, a sudden catastrophic bacterial infection carried my wife away. As a consequence, this was very much on my mind and was unable to write, really, it turned out, until I had written this book. Every time I tried to write a novel or anything, really, it was impossible. But I did not want to write a memoir. There were two things I wanted to do. I wanted to somehow write about this subject, but I wanted to make it more than simply a narrow memoir about me and about the event that had happened. I wanted it to have much larger dimensions, and I didn't want it to be about me. One of the things that struck me was a kind of shock at the time that this happened to me, was that, and this is common knowledge, but it struck me as a shock. This, I realized, is happening to people every day, all over the world. I'm not unique by any means. And I was astounded that if I'm feeling this way, think how many people are feeling the same way everywhere, every day. And frankly, I had never much thought about that. I really hadn't. Our life was not easy, but it was a happy life. And I had just never turned my thoughts to the effect of a death on the survivor. And perhaps that was selfishness on my part. I was a bit older than my wife, and I thought I would die first. Men generally die first in a marriage, and I had never given it any thought. And so I did think about it at that point and decided that I wanted to write. I had always written fiction, and I wanted to write something fictional. So what I did was, what I had never done before, I went back and took the central character of the previous novel and revisited him 10 years later. That is, within his lifespan, 10 years later. So, and his name was Renato, and his wife's name was Alba. The previous novel was called Renato the Painter. It was the longest book I'd ever written. It's not long as other novels go, but it was the longest I had ever written. And so I followed it up with this book, which is, I think, the shortest I've ever written. We've gotten away from maybe your question, but does that help answer it?
Oh, yeah, no, not at all. I don't think you've gone too far at all from the question. In fact, what it leads me to is this notion of, and it's kind of a common theme for me. I think of fiction as indirection. It's a way, which I think art overall is a kind of strategy of indirection for the artist. to grapple with and understand either the self or the being in the world, and the transformative power of art is that it transforms the individual artist, but it also transforms those who experience the art. And I thought it was really interesting that you worked with Renato as an artist, kind of standing in for all artists, writers, of, you know, anybody who has led a creative life and is unexpectedly faced with a deep challenge to the soul and to the being of oneself. And how can art live in the face of tragedy?
You're right. I did have those things in mind. And one of the things I discovered when it happened to me was I had never experienced anything like this. And I began asking other people who had gone through this experience. And one of the universals, almost universal at least, that I came across was that grief is a unique emotion. That is to say, all of us throughout our lives, we experience, say, envy, pride, dislike, hatred, love, all of those emotions, jealousy, what have you. But when you experience grief, it's something that you, as a matter of fact, have not experienced before. So that's one thing that was common about it. The other thing is that it does turn your mind to those abstractions, if you want to call them that. When you began talking earlier, you said it was meditative. And I did try to get to those other things that people meditate on at moments like this. Is there another life? Do we end when we die? What happens to people when they die? And so on and so forth. Those questions suddenly became very real to me. Viscerally real. I mean, they'd always been real questions, but they were viscerally real. And so I began exploring, I guess you could say that. And what you said about writing is very true. I had a teacher when I was a college student, Richard Wilbur, the poet. And I was beginning to write at that time. And he said to me that people write because they have questions about life. And I think that's true. And this is one of the big questions that pops up in everybody's life.
That's true. And it's also, I think, unusual. I think, at least in my experience, it's unusual for writers to write about grief and loss in the way that you did here, which is exploring the person's life in the aftermath. You know, I think that was very different from almost anything I can think of. I'm sure there are examples, and I haven't read every book, but or I haven't read enough books, I guess, to be able to come up with a similar novel. But have you thought of anyone who has addressed the kind of personal loss and grief that you felt and that your character feels? Is there some other book that you can think of that you might compare it to?
No, there isn't. And I never knew as I was writing whether that was out of my own ignorance or an aversion to that kind of a story. I don't know. I do know that I felt that fiction would give me a way of speaking about things that a memoir wouldn't. Now, one of the things let me say what I did read. I did read one book during during the aftermath, as you said, of my wife's death, and that was A Grief Observed. And that's a very short book. And that's the only thing. There were a couple of memoirs that were very, very popular at the time. One is The Year of Magical Thinking,
yep,
by Joan Didion. And then there was another one out, and I've forgotten the name of it. And it was, what's her name? She has three names. I mean, she's a very popular writer and a very good writer. The name escapes me at the moment. And these were two women. And that's one of the things I discovered. As my mother aged, and I thought about, she was over 100, and it was necessary to find an assisted living place for her. And I visited a number, and I saw that they were filled with women. There was only a sprinkling of men. And it's true, statistically, that men die at a younger age than women. And I knew that as a statistic. But what I discovered when I began talking to people, that I found there were very few widowers to talk with and a great many widows. So, but to get back to the other stuff, I did want to give another dimension to it, and I did not want it to be personal. And it so happened that Renato the Painter, the previous novel, had a very complete, he was a very complete character, and he had all sorts of things. He had some of my interests, but his life was completely different from mine. And working with him gave me enough objectivity, if you want to call it that, or distance is another word.
Right.
It gave me enough distance so that I was able to handle the material and able to bring in other stuff, bring in other philosophers, other religious beliefs, and so on.
Well, I noticed that Renato has a deep interest in philosophy, or at least in his lifetime and with his brothers. And you seemed pretty conversant with philosophy. Is that an interest of yours as well as Renato?
Well, I think I was no more interested than any other thoughtful person. It's kind of hard not to think about these things. But they became viscerally important to me. Let me put it that way. I grew up as a not very devout young Catholic boy. And of course, I learned about heaven and hell. But that didn't mean anything to me, really. It was never real to me. And it was something that I wanted to get away from anyway. For me, morality and stuff like that, religiosity, I just wasn't into it. I just was not a good Catholic boy. I wanted to satisfy my mother and father. My father never went to church. It was typical of an Italian-American family. He stayed home and his wife went to church. My mother went to church. And we grew up in a house that was next door to the Catholic Church. And Father McCarthy was the priest there. And I would, in those days, this was before this change in Catholicism here that we had during Pope John the 23rd's reign, you went to confession on the first Friday of every month. I would step into the confessional and the slide would slide back, and I'd get a whiff of whiskey and cigars, and Father McCarthy would begin talking, and I'd say, "Bless me, Father, for I've sinned." And he would say, "Oh, is that you, Gene? This is the secrecy of the confessional?" And I'd say, "Yes." And he said, "How's your mother? And how's your father?" And we'd have a conversation. And he would list the number of sins, and I'd say, "Yes and no," and that would be it. So I also grew up, it was a literate Italian-American family, a very educated Italian-American family. My father was a professor of civil engineering. Renato's father is a worker in tiles and stone, and he's a carver of stones and a layer of tiles and so forth. And he's not a professor the way my father was. But we grew up with Dante, for heaven's sakes. I mean, American families grow up with knowing Shakespeare, reading Shakespeare in school. Well, I grew up with Dante, among other things. And you can't grow up with Dante without knowing about heaven and purgatory and hell, you know. But and I also grew up in a period later in my life when I was in college, when Albert Camus was a very, very popular guy. He was it was the end of World War II, and he was a French philosopher and fantastic. And we tried to smoke as many French cigarettes as we could and take up a residence on what felt like the Left Bank, even if it was only Back Bay, Boston. And so I became familiar with Camus' philosophy. And because I had grown up in with a certain relationship to the church, I knew about St. Augustine, certainly, and I read the Confessions of St. Augustine. And I also studied Latin when I was in school and didn't do very well at it. And when I was in college, I had to have an ancient language. And so the last course I took as a PhD candidate was Latin, if you can believe it. So I was familiar with Lucretius. And because I have a hobby of physics, I was I'm fascinated by Schrodinger. And I'm fascinated by quantum mechanics. And all those things flow together in me. And I had already established the fact in the earlier novel that Renato had two uncles, one of whom was interested in words, and then the other one who was interested in numbers. One was an aeronautical engineer. My father had been a civil engineer. And the other one was a professor of linguistics and language. And so in this novel, you go back into Renato's childhood and you've got those two uncles who disagree on every topic, but are very close friends with each other. And they provide the philosophical background, you might say, in which this novel takes place.
No, it's really interesting to hear you talking about your background. I mean, it kind of leads me to wanting to ask you about your what caused you to first write a novel. I know you published your first novel in 1960. I assume you started writing it a few years before that.
1959, I think, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, 1959.
Yeah, that was a. That was a long time ago. I was 27 years old, yeah. I had begun by going to MIT, as a matter of fact. And after 2 years at MIT, I was ready to throw myself in the Charles River. I was really, I was fascinated by science, but it really wasn't where my heart was. It was a hobby for me. And I won the undergraduate writing prize at MIT as a sophomore. And so I quit MIT and decided to go to art school. I wanted to become a painter, something I didn't get to do until I wrote, Renato the Painter, but I wanted to be a painter. So I talked to a number of guys who were in painting, and they were the most inarticulate bunch I'd ever come across. So I wound up going to Harvard and becoming interested in literature and writing. And so I wrote that first book when I was 27. I was a graduate student at the time.
So were you and you had mentioned Richard Wilbur.
Yeah.
Who were your other writing influences at that time?
I was fascinated by Faulkner. And I had gone to, it doesn't matter when, I guess, but I had read The Sound and the Fury the summer of my junior year. I had gone to Europe and was coming back on a student ship. And there was just this copy of The Sound and the Fury, and a paperback copy. And I read it, and it felt like it had torn my head off. It was fantastic. It was fantastic stuff. And that next year, when I was a senior, I was at Harvard, and I was coming back from ROTC, crossing the bridge with a bunch of other kids in uniform, and this guy stepped off the sidewalk to let us go by, and I recognized it was Faulkner.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so when I got back to my room, I tore my uniform off and, dashed out, couldn't find him anyplace. But I bumped into him A few days later in Harvard Square, we chatted very briefly. He wanted to make sure I was not a reporter. And then I bumped into him down by the river one day. And so we sat on a bench by the Charles River and had a nice talk. And he said a lot of things. It was just fascinating conversation. And I was already at the point of wanting to be a writer by that time. So I read all of his stuff, and eventually when I went back to the university a few years later as a graduate student, I eventually returned to Harvard. I had gone down to Johns Hopkins for a while for a master's. And eventually I drifted back to Harvard for a PhD, and I wrote my dissertation was on Faulkner. So he's a big influence, yeah.
Did you believe at that time that you would be a novelist? You've written a number of novels now. Did you have an expectation, or was it just that you were writing because you needed to write?
Well, I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a writer starting actually when I was at MIT. I mean, I was writing then, as I said, I entered the writing contest. I wrote science fiction. You may not realize this, almost nobody does, although I never changed my name. I have been writing science fiction under the name of Jean Mirabelli, and I've really enjoyed it. Anyway, I knew I wanted to be a novelist, yeah. That was the only thing I wanted to do, starting way back at when I was at Harvard. And I certainly began writing at that time, and it was very unsuccessful. And my first job out of college was as a technical writer at the Foxborough Company, and I bounced around from job to job and did all sorts of things. But always in the background, I wanted to be a writer, and always kept writing. And so when I was in graduate school, and I was taking courses, but I wrote a novel at that time, and I was very fortunate, and I was very lucky, really. It was accepted by Houghton Mifflin, and which is a Boston publisher, and I was a graduate student at Harvard and Cambridge, and everything worked out. So that was the start. And then in the middle of my career, I decided I would try to cut out the middleman, and my wife was editing, freelance editor, and she had a little business going, and so I published a few books through her editing company. It turns out that being the middleman was not the way to profit either.
Publishers know this. Authors don't always know that until they try.
Exactly. You're quite right. By the way, you're quite right. Every author thinks that the publisher is getting rich, and sometimes the publisher isn't. I'm happy now, I must say. Bruce McPherson, he's an independent press publisher, and he's the kind of publisher that I like, I must say. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that is good. Well, it's you're lucky to have a publisher who still maintains is interested in literature and is able to continue to be that kind of a publisher anymore. It's very difficult to do.
It is very hard. You're quite right. And it's an advantage for me to have been an independent press publisher. When I established a little press called Springhopper Press and made sure that I published other people, not just myself. I published other people, and the books I published were reviewed in the Publishers Weekly and so forth. And so when I'm working with Bruce, I know what he's up against, and I know where the advantages lie for him and for me. It's a good relationship we have.
So are you working on another book?
I'm getting ready to, yes. It's very funny you should ask that, or maybe that's an ordinary question. But yeah, I'm trying to gather my strength together. I'm 86 now. That first book was published when I was, it finally got published when I was 28. And I've had a full career as an academic. So I don't know. I'm kind of tired now. I seem to spend a lot of time cooking, buying food. I'm enjoying learning how to cook all over again. I cooked when I was a graduate student. And then after my wife died, I had to learn all over again how to cook. And right now I can smell the chicken cacciatore, which I have prepared.
I'm sorry, I'm not there to eat with you.
But I love writing, and I really don't want, if I can avoid it, I would like Renato After Alba, a book which I love and was really rewarding to write. I would like it not to be my final word. Renato the Painter was a story about a painter who just had, he was a life force himself, and he was a flawed man. Renato has flaws, many flaws, more even than I have. But he was engaged with life in all sorts of ways, too many different ways perhaps, but he was engaged with life. And Renato After Alba, although it's not a book of despair, it is a book of grief. And although it's not a depressing book, it is, as I say, a book of grief. And I happen to be a person who does not believe that grief is the price we pay for love. That's a very engaging saying, and I've heard it, and I certainly understand it. And I know that love ends in loss for one person or the other. That's the nature of it. But I still don't believe that grief is the only payment. And if I could write another book, if I do have the energy, and if I do have the time, it would not be about grief, but rather, in the midst of my grief, I began to wonder what it was about love that made the absence of it so devastating. And so I would like to turn my attention to that and somehow write a book that would explore that. It would have to be a short book. At 86, you don't begin a big, long one.
Well, you could, I think.
Well, this is true. I was having lunch with a writer friend of mine, and I said, I don't know if I want to begin anything long or anything at all. You know, I leave it unfinished. And he said, so he sat back in his chair and folded his arms and said, so what are you going to do? Just sit and not write? And the same thing was true of my friend Bill Kennedy. He said, that's what we do. We write.
That's right. You have no choice.
Throw up my hands and say, yeah, that's what we do. We write. We write about life, and or try to. And as I said, Richard Wilbur said, we write because we don't understand life. We're trying to find an answer to it. And that's what I tried to do in Renato After Alba. I like writing, frankly. Yeah, I do.
Well, I'm glad that you do, because I like your writing, and I hope there will be another book. I think a book about love is actually a great, I mean, of course, there are many books about love, but I think your take on it will be one I'd be interested in reading.
Well, so, you're very kind to say so.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been a pleasure. This is Writer's Cast. I've been talking to Gene Mirabelli about Renato After Alba, a book I would highly recommend.